Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com. Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Buddy. Hello, Buddy.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a bloke who sometimes yells about Jose Mourinho, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
How did you arrive at that one, Chris?
Well, did I arrive at it, or did AI arrive at it? So, one of our ex-subs, Abby, I mean, I'm going to say my favourite ex-sub now, after this.
Top
Abby.
Five, easily.
Yeah, top one for me. Yeah, there's no. This is cemented Abby's place at the top of my list. Abby pulled out all of the intros that we've ever given Nathan, and the ones before we started doing that, and then created an app which generates intros based upon those we've already done, and also a randomly generated one, which is kind of gobbledygook, which is amusing as well. And these are going to be put eventually on our website. It's sensational work. There's another banger that's going to come out. I'll save it for a little further down the line because it's so good. But thank you, Abby. That was an amazing, amazing gesture, and I love it. I love everything you've done with it. Let's start off with this from Dan Alvarez, another patron. Nathan, Dan says, can you all say a bunch of really mean stuff about Jose? Would really appreciate it.
I would like you actually to ask this question to Bardi first.
Go on, Bardi. Talk dirty about your manager.
That was not the behaviour of my manager last night. It was a mess, and it's one of those defeats that leave you searching for something. And I just came up empty. I just came up empty. I'm one of those games where I'm thankful I wasn't at the stadium. I love going to watch football. I love it. I love everything about it. But I was so happy I could turn off my iPad with a few minutes to go, because that's what he left me. He destroyed Tottenham for me last night. But I'm back. Tottenham's back, and I still have faith in my manager because I've got nothing else in my life to hold on to right now, Windy. So I'm holding on to he'll turn this around. But it's an empty hope. I'm dangling from the cliff with my nails are digging in. I'm that guy from EastEnders who went to Cliffhanger. You know that actor who was in Cliffhanger and he ended up falling off the cliff? I reckon that's me.
I definitely noticed a change in you last night, Bardi. I know you'd had a drink, but you were pretty upset with how it all went. You were not pleased.
There were decisions that were made throughout the match that were peculiar, and there was performances throughout the match which were I don't know, they were negligent. They were, if they were other professionals other than footballers, you'd be ringing an ombudsman asking them what are you doing? You have down. You're a professional goalkeeper and you play like that. You're the French captain. This is a lie. Dyer, we'll get into all of this anyway. Let's start. We can start the pod now. I've said bad things. See how broken I am.
We are the ombudsman. We are basically points of view. You're literally on points of view for football. So let's get tucked into it. We'll start where we always do, team selection. So Nathan, I guess no major surprise that we played 3-4-3, but were you surprised about the personnel?
Well, I got the lineups wrong on Twitter when I was trying to do it. I'm surprised. Basically, what I do is I read 11 names, try to memorize all of them, and then put them into my little graphic. So I'm surprised I've never got it horribly wrong before. So for some reason, I thought Regulon was Stein. But no, given his absence, it's kind of not that shocking the way we went with it. I said that I didn't think we would play a back three, and I was wrong about that. But I think that, given the relationship between playing a back three and Ndombele being deeper, and the need to have someone, you know, that technical as early in position as possible, I see that's always the case, but it's especially the case against Liverpool. I think that kind of makes sense. But yeah, I mean, there wasn't... People say, oh, just play Davies, he's a left-back at the left-back, etc. But there wasn't, like... There wasn't a right way to set up the team given the personnel available. Like, for every bit of criticism that I do have for Jose Mourinho, I don't think that it was like just do the simple and obvious correct team lineup situation at all. This is always going to be a tough one to get right. And we were never really likely to do all that well against Liverpool. That for me is not the issue. It's the way in which we lost. It's the way in which we played. It's our complete lack of alternative ways to play, I guess. But there you go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I agree with a lot of what you say. And if I may just make one point about the sort of Davis selection.
Mm.
Now we know that Reguilon is going to miss 3 weeks or so. We know that Ben Davis is going to have to play a lot of football at left back.
Yeah.
So for me, choosing to play him as left centre back felt quite wasteful. It felt as though, you know, save the minutes he's going to get for when he needs to play left back because we don't have an alternative. So what I'm saying is either play him at left back or don't play him at all. You know, if we're going to play him at left centre back, just play Toby, for God's sake. Play Sanchez, play anyone else.
Well, okay, so here is Mourinho's thinking. He feels he needs to play a back three in order to play Ndombele deeper, which is obviously a good thing. We're all in support of Ndombele playing deeper. And in order to play a back three, in his view, he has to play a left-footed centre-back in the left-sided role, which only really leaves Davies. Now, you can say, just play Ndombele deeper in a 4-2-3-1, and you can say, just play a right-footed player. But I think it's worth exploring how we arrive at that.
Hmm. See what you're saying? I still don't think it compensates for the fact that Davies is now going to have to play a crazy number of minutes, which, you know, is not going to be easy for him because he's been a little in and out of the team. And, you know, don't get me wrong, he's played a good number of minutes this season in the Europa League, and he should be sort of sharp enough to manage, but he's suddenly going to be thrust into our A team, as it were.
Mm.
And I think that's going to be a challenge for Ben Davis. Bardi, all the talk about Ndombele playing deeper, I mean, I'm very happy to see Ndombele play deeper. But one of the benefits of Ndombele playing deeper, in fact, the main benefit of Ndombele playing deeper, is you get the ball to him and then he can progress things. But in this match, and under Jose Mourinho generally, I would say, we're really quite poor. I think it was particularly prominent in this. We're really quite poor at distributing to our deepest midfielders from defence. We often sort of play long passes forward and then the midfielders are left to feed off scraps, second balls, 50-50s. What did you think of Ndombele's performance last night and Højbjerg as well? Because I just say first, I thought they both played really well.
Yeah.
Like, I thought they were two of the only players that played really well, but they didn't have much to work with at all.
I don't think we had too much of a problem with that up until Kane's first injury. And I think that's when the game changed for us. I think we were doing okay. When Liverpool had the ball, we dropped deep. Of course we did. But we forced them to drop deep. There was plenty of occasions in the first half an hour where they had 11 men behind the ball, even though McManaman refused to see that. They were doing exactly the same as us. When we were able to sustain the ball for maybe 5, 6, 7 passes, Liverpool did exactly what we did. They dropped back and they let us have it. I didn't think it was too much of a problem. The weird thing about this is I looked at this formation and I thought we were going to win this game because I think it was the right formation. I just think the problem was the players, the individuals in those positions just had an awful, awful game. Doherty was terrible. Davies was pretty bad. And I didn't think Aurier was that bad either, but we just, at crucial moments, we didn't play how Mourinho envisioned it to happen. And that's on Mourinho as well, because he needs to change that. And you could see him getting frantic towards the end of that half. He could see what was happening and we could feel it as well. I don't think our midfield was that bad. Yes, they were outnumbered and Liverpool had plenty of the ball, but that was always going to happen. The game changed for me when Kane's ankle went and then when his second ankle went. That was the turning point in the match.
Yeah, I think I largely agree with that. I didn't think the 3-4-3 was a problem at all in the first half. You know, don't get me wrong, it's a low bar. You know, I'm not saying I want Spurs to play this way, but given that Mourinho does play this way, particularly against the better teams, I thought it went okay. I thought it went fine. And then we just conceded a stupid goal, a really stupid goal, and that essentially ruined, that undid the whole plan. That undid every aspect of the plan. It meant suddenly we've got to come out and play. And in trying to do that, as Nathan mentioned, in trying to find an alternative way to play, we looked an absolute shambles.
I mean, I haven't seen a series of individual errors that bad since AVB days. You know, the goals we conceded reminded me of the game at the Etihad where we got smacked by Man City that time when Lamella's debut season, and it was just like, what are you doing? Really, what are you doing? How? Yeah, I mean, you can see I'm still confused by it now, even thinking back to it. Dyer, Lloris on that first goal. One of you take control of that situation. The ball was bundled in from 30 centimetres. The cross from Mane wasn't whipped, wasn't pulled back. It was a bobbled cross that Dyer didn't know whether to look, follow the man. He didn't know whether to cover the space. He was lost. We've spoken many times about Dyer never knows what's happening behind him. And in slow motion, you see him look over his face and he's praying no one's behind him. This time there was. I thought Lloris should have come out and covered that cross. Alisson would have picked that up like it was a dropped wallet, you know? It was pretty bad. It was awful.
We had a question about that goal from Oregon Shane, who says it's not the first time we are caught in a moment of silence between Lloris and the centre-back. While Dyer is not our long-term centre-back, our captain and keeper needs to take charge there. Do you agree? I mean, personally, I think they both need to take charge in that situation. But, I mean, obviously one of them does. Dyer, the thing with defending in those situations is if you have any doubts at all, you just deal with it. You know, and then quite often in football, you'll see a goalkeeper and a centre-back looking at each other and be like, I didn't know what to do, so I just dealt with it. I just put it out for a corner. But that's what you do, and then you have an inquest later. They both left it. They literally chose to leave it to one another. That was a choice they had, and it ended up in the back of the net. And it was really, really frustrating. And Nathan, how do you feel about how the match went, you know, from that point?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was it. Firstly, Aurier is getting off Scott free of his involvement.
Oh my god! Yeah,
personal blame. Then he deserves an equal share.
Yeah, I mean, Mane got the better of him a few times, to be honest.
Mane gets the better of a lot of people, but the extent to which he was finding that success, that goal was pretty obviously coming. And in the end, it's a pretty simple double movement, and or you're just switching off anyway. Mm-hmm. Whatever. From that point on, that was kind of the game. I felt. Yes, I think our plan and position was to send it long to Harry Kane, and he had some really smart, brilliant knockdowns and first-time touches to help set us off on counters. And obviously, once you lose that and instead you're playing Son up top, it's going to limit your chances. But like, that was it. That was our plan for possession, and it's just so frustrating. It's so frustrating to hear Jose Mourinho shout, play some fucking football from the touchline, when it's like, okay, sure, yes, that is what we need to do, but that's not what we've been doing for a year now. What's the plan? How is that an instruction? I've long said that you shouldn't, you know, be aiming to take possession to Liverpool. There are kind of, I think, ways to go about it, but it's a very, very difficult, very challenging thing to do. Of course, playing a defensive game plan against Liverpool is the way to set up. But to have no ability, to have no plan for how to go about it, that is what's so frustrating. And once we're behind, and it's not just Liverpool is always going to be the most extreme version of that, but generally, once we're behind, the game is over for us. And that is such a frustrating way to watch your team play. That like the game is over once we've conceded, and I hate that. I hate that so much.
So we had a question from Newman, who says, are you guys at least happy we didn't sit back the entire game? He adds also, Doherty seems bad. Yes, Doherty. Poor Matt Doherty. I mean, the thing about Doherty, right, is this isn't, it's not fair to judge him on what we're seeing so far. This isn't what he's about. This isn't him. He's being asked to fulfil a role that doesn't suit. And in this game in particular, he was playing on the left and he looked completely out of sorts. He's also had a bad run of form, looks out of sorts confidence-wise.
He's had coronavirus. Don't forget that one.
I completely forgot he's also had coronavirus. Yeah. No, it's a really, really important point to remember. I think it's unfair to sort of scapegoat him at this point. You know, let's wait and see what he can offer further down the line. He's not a terrible player. We've seen him play very, very well for Wolves in the recent past. So let's not scapegoat Doherty too much. But Nathan, were you at least happy we didn't sit back the entire game?
We may as well have done.
Yes, that's how I felt too.
You know, we didn't sit back because we had to attack, because we were multiple goals down for, you know, periods of the game. And we didn't make anything of it. So, no, I wasn't happy that we didn't sit back the entire game. If we'd sat back the entire game, that meant we would have only conceded, you know, a last minute loss. And that would have been frustrating. But there you go. The conceding much earlier, having to attack and having just no ability to go about it. That doesn't make me happy, I'm afraid.
Bardi, I don't want to make you too angry, Bardi, but if you think to the substitutions, so we knew Kane was going to have to go off. We didn't know that Aurier was going off. What would you have done, Bardi, at halftime?
I mean, I don't know in what universe you think Lamella is a suitable replacement for Kane. I don't understand that. You've got Bale. Bale is faulty, but Bale can stand up straight. I think Bale offers more than Lamella. I've even lost my train of thought. I'm so
Vinicius.
Broken. Vinicius as well. Put Vinicius on. Son was having some joy. He scored a goal which was ruled marginally offside. He had another opportunity. He was making... I know me and you had a discussion over how well he played. I thought he was pretty bad in link-up play throughout. But he was making runs and he was a concern for the Liverpool defence. And at least he kept Trent Alexander-Arnold honest and didn't allow him to run on so much. So I think keeping him wide would have been a better plan than putting big Vinicius. At least then, if you're going to go long, you've got a big man, and he's pretty adept. He's shown he's pretty adept at linking play as well. He's not Harry Kane levels of linking, but he can make an assist. So I would have gone Vinicius or Bale. I don't understand the continued reliance upon Lamella. I think the sooner his contract expires, the better, because he just causes a selection problem for managers. They just seem to like him so much, and
runs
we
hard.
Really need to move on. He runs hard. He stands on some people's hands, which is all funny, all fun and games when you're winning matches. But it's not great when you're getting spanked at home. 8 years, man. 8 years he's been here, and
testimonial, yeah, coming up.
I know. Can you believe it? He's done 8 years. It's 16 goals in 8 years. Yeah, I don't really want to see him or Lucas play ever again.
Wow. Okay. So I understood the logic of the substitutions when I saw literally the names. I mean, they weren't my choices, but I would have brought on Bale for Kane as an enforced sub, and then I would have brought on Alderweireld for Doherty.
That's the one.
I think that would have been the obvious move, and move Davis out to the left. But I understood why he would bring Winks on to sort of try and play through the middle and have some possession and try and link, you know, move the ball forward quicker through midfield. But I felt like he undermined that substitution by then pushing Ndombele forward. Like they needed to be together in midfield. I think it needed to be a three with Winks, Huibier and Ndombele. And I think also with the Lamella move, if you're going to bring Lamella on for Kane, I think you just play Lamella where Kane's playing. You don't then move Son to be the sort of the central forward who's being asked to do things that we know Son doesn't do effectively. And you sort of, in my view, you kind of lost all of the impact that Son was having. Not that he was special, but he was definitely keeping Liverpool on their toes, and they were concerned about him. And at the very least, he's causing Alexander-Arnold to think twice about running too far forward.
Yeah.
So that seemed like a very strange use to me. I was massively confused by the way we set up. And then we find out after the match that there's been... So this is how it's described by ESPN. Aurier was furious when Mourinho singled him out for criticism regarding the goal in the dressing room. Other players were also involved, with Eric Dyer and Joe Roden criticised for their role in the goal. Aurier engaged in a heated exchange with Mourinho, according to ESPN sources, and when Mourinho decided to substitute him before the start of the second half, the Ivory Coast international decided to leave the stadium. Sources added that some players felt the halftime chaos in the dressing room, as well as Harry Kane's injury and the change of tactics, were among the reasons why Trent Alexander-Arnold scored just 2 minutes into the second half.
There was something visibly wrong with the team at the start of the second half. There was a marked drop-off, and we had Kane standing still for 10 minutes and we did okay, but there was something wrong. I joked it like the you know, it was like Sunday football. They'd all had a pint at half time because they went out and they just looked slow. They looked like they'd lost concentration. And yeah, and it was summed up by Lloris's attempted save. I still think there's no excuse. That chaos shouldn't stop your international goalkeeper from pushing the ball behind for a corner at least, or holding it. That was weird, but there was visibly something wrong with Tottenham after half time.
That's not like Sergio Aurier.
That's Nathan's catchphrase. I always like to hear that catchphrase.
I think Serge is right. I think I would be upset as well if I was Serge, because if he's getting singled out, like ESPN says, he was negligent. But I think Dier and Lloris were more negligent, if that is even possible, if that even exists in the English language as a description. Sure. Yeah. I think Dier and Hugo would have got, I would have been throwing football boots at them, not Serge, for that goal.
So ESPN say that Mourinho singled Aurier out. There were rumours on Twitter, which some people have told me are true. I don't know what to believe, that Lloris and Aurier had a big bust up at half time, and there was glass and ice everywhere in the dressing room.
Wait, why is glass in the dressing room? Like, there's bare feet.
I was wondering that. You know, yeah. Are they throwing like cups of ice against walls or something? I don't know. It makes
bottles
you wonder.
Bottles of Perrier water being chucked around. I don't know. I don't believe glass and ice. You know, I don't believe that.
But I think it does make sense. You know, when to retrofit, knowing that after the game, you sort of, you look back and say, yeah, something like that could easily have happened at halftime, judging by how shook we look at the start of the second half. We were hopeless, as Bardi says. And it's not just, you know, Lloris obviously should do better. Obviously he should do better. But the gaps were appearing all over the place. Alexander-Arnold suddenly up playing right wing because he can and is able to just like spank one in off Lloris. So there were problems aside from Lloris's individual error. And this is the problem I've got. You know, I think it's very easy for Mourinho and everyone else to sort of say, you know, this is that purely down to individual errors. But that was a catalogue of systemic errors in that second half where Liverpool were just tearing us apart. You know, we were kind of got lucky with the Firmino handball situation where that goal was ruled out. There were other chances they had as well. They comprehensively destroyed us in the second half, in second gear, you know, with Jordan Henderson and Nathaniel Phillips playing at centre back. It was not good. That second half was a mess. It was a real mess. Bardi, I see you've added something to the running order. Take us through it.
Yeah, Dan Kilpatrick wrote something in the Evening Standard, and I hadn't thought about this. Well, we watched the defenders, and they're pretty bad. But he's not giving Mourinho a way out, but he is saying that our transfer policy with regards to defenders has been awful since 2015. Essentially, apart from Reguilón, we haven't signed a better defender since we signed Toby in 2015. And if you think about it, that's true. We haven't improved our defence. And this is a failure of the club. It's a failure of our scouting. And it's a huge problem. And we spoke in the last podcast about where Mourinho's been the most successful, when he's had, of course, a solid backbone, a solid team, a solid defensive team at least. And yeah, we haven't signed well, we haven't bought well there, and we are paying the price for that.
So on that note, Nathan, we had a question from Felix Groughton, who said that he enjoyed listening to Bardi's rundown in the last podcast about the players Mourinho had at centre-back. So Felix says, from that, I concluded that Mourinho doesn't seem to try to improve defenders who are at the club already. Instead, he'll buy an experienced defender or two in the transfer window. My question to you is, do you think this is a sustainable method, seeing as Mourinho is likely only going to be Spurs for another season or two, and we don't have the financial might of a Real Madrid or Chelsea? Would it make more sense for the club to pressure Mourinho, a coach who's supposedly good defensively, to focus on training Tanganga and Rodon?
I mean, there's like he's moved Dier back into his centre back role, and I think he has improved Dier to an extent, at least somewhat. You know, there was sort of the idea of Tanganga coming through, but then he's mainly played fullback minutes. Rodon has made his way into his team, and I will say that, like, I really appreciate Mourinho's comments after the match, saying that Rodon played well, made a mistake, but is otherwise, you know, is still. You know, back in contention again, and rightly so, because I think that Rodon has sort of asserted himself over the last few weeks. It's not like there's absolutely no positive trajectory from centre backs at all under Mourinho. But yes, I think there was a report recently coming out that he wants us to sign our Van Dijk. He wants us to sign our, you know, world leading centre back that will transform the club. And it's like, okay, well, first off, who have you got in mind? Because like, there are only so many of the very best centre backs in the world. How are we going to be able to afford this player? Do you think that player is Skriniar?
Spoiler alert, it's not.
And it's like, how much are we needing to invest to make a style of football in which we concede 50 crosses work for you? Like, I've got nothing against us investing in our centre backs, but to specifically invest a large sum of money for the specific type of defender that Mourinho wants, yeah, I can see how there might be problems with that. My mentions week after week now are filled to the brim with people blaming individual defenders, and I'm not free of doing that myself. I call Aurier out on this podcast on a regular basis. I've criticised Matt Doherty. I've pointed to the errors in Eric Dier's game, etc. But I just think that it's an overfocus on that, and it's absolving the manager of the decisions that he makes and the decisions that the club has made, and the approach to the games and the players in front of the defenders as well. Just to say our defenders are bad, our defenders are bad, our defenders are bad. The defenders aren't great, but we aren't doing enough for that.
I will tell you one thing. If Liverpool had Eric Dier and Ben Davis at centre-back yesterday, and we'd had Jordan Henderson and Nathaniel Phillips, it would not have made a single bit of difference.
That's a great point, Windy. That's a great point.
That is a good point.
You know, this is the thing. If our defenders are so terrible, so absolutely abjectly awful, that they are almost not worthy to be Premier League footballers, why are we playing a system that requires them to make so many defensive actions in every match? Why are we encouraging teams to put crosses into the box over and over and over again? Why do we want them to be literally like on their toes for 90 minutes if they can't be trusted to do that? And that's the point. Same with Lloris. You know, I've seen a lot of criticism about Lloris from last night. As you know, Bardi, you stuck the boot in a bit. You weren't very impressed with him. In fact, I think you said you think he's finished. But like, I feel like Lloris is definitely on the decline. In my view, definitely, undoubtedly on the decline, but it's being exposed by the system. I feel like this is just, it's so unhelpful to all of our sort of triumvirate at the back, to play this way and then just call them out and play this way and call them out and play this way and call them out. And yes, you know, I don't think Eric Dier is great. I really don't think Eric Dier is a particularly good player. I think he's fine. I think he's like a 6 out of 10, maybe a 7 out of 10 centre back. But come on, you know, this is about way more than just Eric Dier.
I would challenge you on this. I think if Alisson plays for us, we don't concede that first goal, we don't concede the second goal, and we stay in the match. I think Lloris does have a huge impact on how we play. I think a better goalkeeper makes a speculative, catches a speculative effort or knocks it wide or is able to play a high line. Look how often Alisson was rescuing his team when Son was on the attack. Against any other team, Son is through on goal 3 or 4 times in that match. Had that been West Ham and Fabianski, for example, Spurs are winning 3-0. I think Lloris's decline is having a bigger impact on Tottenham than Eric Dier.
But that's not the reason we don't play a high line, Bardi. You know, that's still a choice.
I don't think you can play a high line with Lloris there.
I don't think there's any way Mourinho plays a high line.
No, well, either way, whatever. Well, fair enough. Yes, Mourinho won't. But I don't think if you put Klopp in Tottenham's shoes, Klopp doesn't play a high line with Lloris. It's suicide.
Yes, that's a fair point. I think he would definitely want to sign a new goalkeeper.
First thing he'd do.
Yeah. And I think it's as much about his distribution as his sort of speed off the line. His speed off the line is concerns me, though, because he used to be so good at it, and it's just gone from his game. But his distribution is a problem.
I mean, I'd pay good money to hire Pep Guardiola and just watch him on his first training session pack Lloris's and Joe Hart's bags and Gazzaniga's and send all three of them home and just like, don't come back. That's what he would do. Lloris is not fit for... Lloris is fine if you're going to sit back and play deep and you expect him to save some shots. But yeah, he can't be... The next manager we get, the first thing we need to do is sign a goalkeeper and over a centre-back, in my opinion.
I think that's harsh, personally. I think he's better than that. He's on decline, and he is not just reducing in quality, but yeah, as you point out, reducing in sort of the spectrum of his play, is that he used to be sort of synonymous with sweeping.
Yeah.
And now he may not leave his 6-yard box under any conditions. I acknowledge that, but I think he's declining from a very high place. He's still one of the best shot stoppers in the world. So to trade out, you know, the fifth best keeper in the world for the second best keeper in the world probably doesn't change an enormous amount for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also just think if we played a possession-based style that didn't mean... So if we had more of the ball and the opposition had less of the ball and created fewer sort of crossing opportunities, it would reduce Lloris's exposure to this stuff. You know, if he's just being asked to save shots from range more often, that's much better for him. Boys, I'm going to ask you a question now. We have a question here from Cole for CD Mole, who's another of our favourite ex-subs. Mm. Do you want me to ask this question or not, is the question I'm going to ask.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
If anyone's listening this far, they're emotionally prepared for this question, I think.
Good point. Okay, here's what Cole says. How bad would things have to get for Mourinho to get the sack?
I don't think that it happens until the summer. I think if we lost the season out... okay, if we lose 6 in a row, fair enough. But I think if we just have poor results and we slide down to mid-table and we lose, I think probably stupidly, the League Cup final has far too much waiting in the future of Jose Mourinho, but there you go. But I think he pretty much gets the season no matter what. How bad will things have to have gone? I think we would have had to lose the League Cup final, and I think that we would have to be 6th or lower. Other than that, or maybe something like a big falling out with Harry Kane and the rest of the players or whatever, things like that. But otherwise, and even then, I'm ready for him to go. I think everyone knows that. But I don't think Levy will be in such a rush, and I think that we may have a third season with Mourinho still.
Bardi, what do you think?
While we're still in contention for the top four, Mourinho doesn't go anywhere. If we finish top four and win the League Cup, Mourinho will say this is a fantastic season, and Daniel Levy will be happy with that. I think at the start of the season, I would have been happy with that. I would have taken that, and I'm pretty sure all of us here would have taken a League Cup and top four.
Sure.
Because that top four is, and whilst that's still a possibility, he doesn't go anywhere. I think if we do a Pochettino slide down the table and top four is out of contention, then I think he goes, but he's going to be really expensive to fire. The best situation would be, I think I said this before, the best situation would be we finish top four, win a trophy, Portugal change their manager, and Mourinho walks away a hero for giving Tottenham a trophy. For me, that would be, you know, walking into the sunset. He'd remain my manager because he got us a cup after so many years and we got top four back. And then very happy, now let's do a project. And then we can flip the table and it can be me versus you two when the next laptop manager starts messing up. when your hero, Ralph, starts losing us games in the last minute.
We lose 9-0.
Lose 9-0 to Jamie Vardy's Leicester. Then we'll be in the dark days.
Jamie Vardy, like, running Eric Dyer ragged for 90 minutes.
Oh, God. Hugo Toby, and Eric Dyer, Matt Doherty, and Ben Davies, because Reguilón's fucked off back to Real Madrid. Those five trying to play a high line, it's going to be chaos, man.
So I think I agree with you both that Levy won't be rushing to pull the trigger. I think Abramovich would have done. Sure. I think Abramovich might have sacked Mourinho twice by now.
yeah.
But you know, like, I feel like Mourinho this year has not done any better than Frank Lampard did at Chelsea.
I still think what Mourinho's doing okay. If we win our game in hand, we go to 36 points, we're a point off Liverpool. We're not doing too bad. It's had a bit of a wobble. I think the next month will be key to Tottenham. What we do in the next month. We've got some games coming up that we need to start winning. If we don't win our next four games, then I think he's fired. But I think we'll turn this around.
I really don't. I think honestly, I'm very in a very pessimistic place with Spurs, but I honestly think we plummet like a stone now. I think we, you know, Kane being injured We're so reliant on Harry Kane. This team is set up for Kane and Son. There's no other. I mean, Ndombele is wonderful. He's amazing. But without Kane, this team is nothing. Mm.
But we're so reliant on Harry Kane and Heung-min Son because we haven't seen anything else other than Harry Kane and Heung-min Son. We haven't seen Bale. We haven't seen Vinicius. And I'm not saying they're better players because they're not. But sometimes people are galvanized. Son is quite often, more often than not, galvanized when Kane's not there. Perhaps Son, Vinicius and Bale pull something together. Perhaps now Dele Alli's got no option. He can't play Lamella. He can't play anyone else. Dele Alli's not leaving anywhere. Now Mourinho's got no option like he did with Ndombele but to turn to Dele. And maybe Dele rescues him. You never know. I still think there's legs in this team. We're not in the situation we were last year when we lost Kane and Son. There's still some talent in this squad that hopefully they can eke something out.
I'm going to ask you one more question and then we're going to wrap up because this was, you know, just meant to be a quick reaction pod and we've already dragged it out longer than I expected. So I was talking via WhatsApp last night to my friend Aaron Moore, and he raised a really interesting point around how football is being digested at the moment in lockdown times. And he said things have felt a bit unhealthy and people are behaving in ways that they don't necessarily mean, but they're antagonizing their friends via WhatsApp. And, you know, Bardi, we've sort of seen this in our Fighting Cock WhatsApp group where, you know, I wouldn't say antagonizing is the right word, but we're kind of winding up one another up, not you and I necessarily, but Alex from Bristol and I are very down on Mourinho. Ricky and you are very up on Mourinho. T is somewhere in the middle. Flav is like trying to just enjoy the moments he can, and he gets annoyed when he reads the negativity from Alex and I know, and I completely get it. I need to change my behaviour, but there's a point here, isn't there, about this time, this, like, the way we're all watching football in this, you know, it's very, the matches are all so close together. We're not in the pub watching them together. We're not at the ground watching them together. It's quite unhealthy, isn't it? It feels strange. It feels like it's putting a lot of pressure on friendships.
I think so as well, because we're all sat in front of a TV or sat in front of a computer. Twitter's a lot busier than it normally is. I know for sure I wouldn't be on Twitter during the game. I'd go back and catch up, see what happened later on. But everybody is almost mini blogging the game as it goes along. So yeah, it's different, and you're left with. Yeah, the whole experience of watching football right now is different, and it's having an effect. And when it's almost you're detaching yourself from the game because you can just like get up and just walk away from it. And yeah, I think this is weird football that we're seeing at the moment. Not just, and I think we're seeing other clubs being affected by this as well, other supporter bases. But yeah, it would just make the whole pandemic better if Tottenham won matches. Fix coronavirus by winning games.
Nathan, obviously you felt for some time a similar disconnect to me. How's that treating you now?
I do wonder. I mean, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, if you didn't have a Spurs podcast, would you still be watching the matches?
I would have them on. I don't know if I would be paying much attention, you know. Yeah, my only concern is, will I have a slightly hard time getting it back? And I think that I won't. I think that as soon as there's
you really won't.
Yeah, as soon as there's a new project to get attached to, I'll be a fanatic again. So that's fine, basically. In terms of like texting rather than chatting over a beer, yeah, I think we are all. A lot more aggressive in written form than face to face. One thing, maybe this is just only relevant to me and you, but like with 18,000 something Twitter followers and my tendency to tweet sort of aggravating stuff, I get a lot of replies from like Jose Mourinho fanboys with their Mourinho avatar that weren't Spurs fans before he came to Spurs and that kind of stuff, and I get nonsense from them, and I pride myself on my handling of them by my replies, but I think that like sometimes just genuine Spurs fans get sort of caught up in the crossfire of me just, you know, handing out beef. So I do worry that I've gone slightly too far in that sort of antagonistic, you know, kind of fuck-offness than the way that I talk to people on Twitter sometimes.
That's a really, really good point. And I think it's something that I need to be wary of as well, because if you've just come off Twitter where you've had like 25 replies of people just being aggressively pro Mourinho, and then you go into a conversation with someone who, you know, if I go into a conversation with Bardi after that, like Bardi's going to get a lot worse treatment than he deserves.
Yeah.
It's a really good point.
I'm glad you're admitting I'm your punchbag, Windy. I'm glad you're telling everybody that. That's my role here.
You take it so well.
Yeah, it takes a lot to vex me.
That was very cathartic. Thanks for the chat, guys. That was excellent stuff. And we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud E Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.